and mental health issues. The second is school health services, and Dr. Dlamini, when she has her turn, will provide a lot of detail. But just to say that we are looking for a date in September, probably the last week of September, for the Ministers of Health and Basic Education to jointly launch our school mobile services. Mm. And the idea then, without preempting what Dr. Dlamini is going to say, is to take school health services to schools. So that over time, all schools will be visited by a school health team, and she will tell you how comprehensive the package of services are that we are proposing that will be rendered by the school health team. The third is, you know, most of our specialists work in either regional or tertiary hospitals currently. So the idea that the ministers have, and that we are currently implementing in the department, is to take specialists into districts. The idea is that every district will have a specialist team made up of an obstetrician, a pediatrician, a family physician, an anesthetist where we can find one, a specialized advanced midwife, a pediatric nurse, and a primary healthcare trained nurse. So a team of seven specialists, both nursing and medically trained. This first role would be to focus on maternal and child health, and that's where the prevention, the promotion, etc. come in, and also TB and HIV. And the family physician will, of course, focus on also the non-communicable diseases, the more chronic diseases. The idea, honorable members, is that this team will focus on improving clinical quality of care, because we know that we have many people working in districts, in primary healthcare facilities, community health clinics, district hospitals, but the quality of care is not always optimal. So the idea is that the team will focus on clinical quality, both on the prevention side and on the treatment, care, and support side. Now the good news is that we advertised positions for every district in the country last year. We have since had interviews, we've selected them, we have a database now in every province bar one of the numbers of people deployed. The full team is not in every district because there's a shortage of all of these people. Mm-hmm. But we have now 172 people that have been employed to work in these teams. And again, the minister will be launching these teams when we have a formal induction and orientation program for these teams. So these teams will be looking at, you know, how our frontline workers are doing with respect to identifying challenges, dealing with challenges that include issues around disability and rehabilitation. We are hoping then that this will also extend the services of a specialist nature into communities. So those are the three specific things we are doing to take these services into communities that really being led by the minister. The other few things I want to respond to before turning to my colleagues are around the issue of discrimination of people with disabilities, persons with disabilities by healthcare workers. Now, unfortunately, this is not confined to people with disabilities, or persons with disabilities. You know, we get numbers of complaints from patients that they've been not well treated by healthcare workers. Now, we also have a number of letters saying how well they've been treated. So it's a mixed bag. There are people who go to health facilities and will come away satisfied with the care they receive, but there are also people who come away very unsatisfied, dissatisfied with their care they get. And we have a complaints system. There's a complaint system, as you know, the president has a presidential hotline. And we get complaints from there. So once they're logged in with the president, those that relate to the Department of Health are sent to the minister, which are filtered down to the department. Then the minister, as you know, almost everybody has his cell phone number. So he gets any number of complaints directly to him, and he will call and say to any one of us, I've received this complaint, deal with it and tell me what happened. Then there's the more formal thing of complaints to the MECs, complaints to the department via letters, telephone, and faxes, and emails now. And I can tell you, in my branch, I deal with complaints almost every day, which I then say to my managers, please go check what happened and report back to me in report form. So there are a number of complaints across the system, not just around So one of the things we're doing, because we came across this also with respect to maternity. There are many complaints of people who go to deliver in our health facilities and say that they're not well treated. So Dr. Carlo can tell you about the program we have initiated on health workers for change. But the program we had in
Dr. Pili. It's 12:43. Can we try and be short?
Okay, I'll stop here now.
I'm
gonna pass on to my.
It's so interesting. You people can go on and on, but the time is after us. Yeah, but it's so interesting. If the problem is that at 2 o'clock the house is sitting.
Let me just say one more thing on our health facilities. As I said, we've just completed an audit of our 4,200 health facilities.
Mm.
And that includes human resources, package of services, quality of care, infrastructure and equipment.
Mm.
So we know now what are the challenges in each one of our public health facilities. And there are now facility improvement plans being implemented in each of those.
Mm.
Which of course will need additional money, better management and the rest of it.
Mm.
But let me stop now.
Yeah, it's so interesting, man.
Professor Freeman to talk about prevention in particular.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Philip. I think Dr. Pillay knows my passion for prevention.
Yeah.
it is. But I think that the comments really just reflect the possibilities if one can provide the proper services from earliest through a disability. And I think that the points that you were making around what people with Down syndrome can do is what the convention is about and what we are trying to follow through. Because I think we do believe that people with disability have endless possibilities, but we have got to allow and facilitate that process to take place. And we know it. It's just difficult sometimes to do it. Okay. Just let me say something about the prevention things. I mean, people were talking about the early screening of babies. Just to say that about 2 weeks ago, we called all the experts from all the different universities and NGOs and so on to look at that very issue. And clearly we can screen babies when they're born and intervene and save a lot of disability if we do that. But it is an expensive process and it does take staff to do that. So one of the things we were looking at was, can one pre-screen so that you actually look at high vulnerability? And we know who's highly vulnerable, and then intervene with those. The issue there is that those are the hardest ones to actually rectify. So the recommendation that came out was, no, you have to screen all.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of issues. Recommendations will be coming out from that committee within the next couple of weeks, and we can share that with you. So what I'm saying is that we don't make decisions on our own. We do bring in the experts, and we are working with all the people who can help us to make rational and evidence-based decisions around these things. Around the community health workers, the question really that I think that I'm grappling with all the time is, at what point does one ask community health workers to do so much that they become ineffectual in everything that they do? And there is a group of interventions that are currently being taught as part of the program that Dr. Pillay was talking about. When we start adding disability, when we start adding counselling intervention, then these are people who don't have a lot of education, and then we can overload them to the point where they can't do anything properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the balance that we're trying to work on at the moment. Having said that, the community health workers will be registering every family who falls within their area. And one of the things that they will have to register is disability. So we will then know exactly where people with disability are so that we can then go and assist where necessary or refer where necessary and so on. And I think we'll also be finding those many people who are locked in these rooms because they are disabled and actually never get services. And I think that the outreach that we are planning for is actually going to help us to get those people into the system and then hopefully to do the rehabilitation that's necessary.
I will give you half a quarter of a second.
Okay, disability awareness is a big issue for us. I'm not quite sure exactly at which point one would be asked to intervene. I mean, I think that one of the things is that people with disability don't have the promotional material that other people do because of their disability. For example, AIDS education for people who can't hear or can't read. And we have actually for the blind around AIDS awareness. We have produced materials in Braille so that people can read. So we are certainly very aware of these things. We are making efforts, probably not enough, but with your help, I think that we can actually move this quite a lot forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about school health. Because we are focusing on the first 1,000 days of life. That's during the pregnancy and the first 2 years of life, and we call that the first 1,000 days. Because what you do then will affect that person for the rest of their life. So if you can prevent at that stage, you're actually giving a very efficient service. So we are encouraging our moms to book very early. And as soon as they miss their first period, they're not actually going to confirm their pregnancy and book. So that's one area where we'd like that kind of promotion to happen. And then that's where you also will identify your high risk pregnancies, so that you may also intervene very early and put in corrective measures at that time. And then when is the baby checked? During the neutral, the baby's high risk will actually go even further to try and identify any problem that may be there. At birth, all babies are checked from head to toe to make sure everything is intact. And then first 6 days also the baby needs to be checked. And here we're also looking at our community health workers to actually do home visits. Because in some cultures, you don't take a baby out into the open and start wandering anywhere. So we'll bring the service to the home. And then at 6 weeks again, the baby needs to be checked. So that's times when you can actually sometimes see defects with vision. Maybe it's a bit too early for hearing, but definitely with some abnormalities in the eyes, you can pick it up that time. And then you also tell our moms to then watch out and see if the child can hear. There are certain things you can early on see that maybe your child can't hear. Of course, the no child card has also got some areas which tell you how to pick up that kind of something maybe not. Now, our school health, we've had a school health service from 2003, but it's now been restructured and reviewed. We will have set school health teams, which will be led by a health a professional nurse, and we're looking to recruit retired nurses, because not all retired nurses are able to work. Some of them are still very fit and very, very knowledgeable. So we are calling and we are recruiting nurses from that sector. We're also redeploying, but we're also employing newly qualified nurses to actually assist us with the school health team. So the school health team will be led by a professional nurse, assisted by an enrolled nurse, and we'll also have a health promoter as part of that team. Ideally, we would have loved to have a school health team per school, but we just don't have the resources and the staff. So what we've looked at is to target the most under-resourced schools and the most rural schools, and these are what we call the quintile one schools. So when you look at the categorization of schools, they are categorized from quintile one to quintile five. So quintile one, most under-resourced one is quintile all the way one, two, three, four, five, five being the most well-resourced and most affluent schools. So our intervention is to target all schools, but over 5 years. So starting with year one, which is this year, where we're looking at quintile one and quintile two schools, where these teams will then go out and offer a package of services. So we cannot go to all the schools, but we also cannot see each and every learner in the school that they've chosen. So we've looked at targeting the educational phases. Now, educational phases, we've got the foundation phase, which is grade R, because our school health service will also touch the grade R's. We're looking at the intermediate phase, the senior phase, and then finally the FET phase, which is the grades 10 to 12, which are our teenagers. So we want the service to actually reach them as well. The package that we're offering is designed to suit the school age. So there's a very strong emphasis on screening for hearing and vision, stability, as well as the psychosocial barriers to learning in the very young children. So those will be our foundation phase, our grade, which is grade R, up to grade 3. So our school health teams will be equipped with audiometers, and they will be equipped with the different tools that you need to achieve screening for those barriers to learning. The older age groups, there's a screening for barriers to learning, but we now also focus, strong focus on mental health and counseling on sexual and reproductive health matters. So everything is age appropriate. And in the younger children, when we talked about sexual reproductive health, we have a focus on know your body, which is the right language and the right sensitivities to talk to those children. Then the mobile services, because we'll be purchasing mobiles to actually take the services to the school. Each mobile will have a mobile that will be fully equipped for the optometry, because we'll be checking the eyes, and we'll have a mobile that will also offer the dental help. So we'll check the teeth and also treat the child for those different. Then we'll also have a KC mobile. So it's a set of three looking at those key areas. So that's, I think, in a nutshell, what we're doing for the school.
Mm.
Just on that point, please, very, very short. Nursing colleges have been closed down. What is the intention of the department to reopen nursing colleges to get more nurses into the system? And then on quintiles, and I must warn the department, that as I did my oversight, many, many schools are in the wrong quintiles. Children are in quintile 5, coming from very, very poor communities, so please guard against that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to respond to the question about whether we are increasing access to services to persons with disabilities, and make a comment that previously rehab never appeared in the primary healthcare package. It is now for the first time that we have included it, both at the prevention level as well as early intervention and referral. And linked to that is the whole question of how we take the services to the community, because we do recognize and adopt the community-based rehab approach as a philosophy first. So interacting with sectors that are involved directly with community-based rehabilitation, and how does the primary healthcare outreach teams link in with the sectors providing services. So we do see it as a continuum of care. I'd like to also respond to the issue about complaints. Are people with disabilities able to make complaints? As part of the assessment of facilities, all facilities are required to have complaint boxes and information on how to complain. And I've just come back from a trip from very, very rural Northern Cape, and I have picked up complaints made by persons with disabilities in their families, which is really very impressive. The question about how we ensure equitable distribution of therapists, you may be aware that therapists have to do community service, and what we've encouraged the provinces to do is to make sure that the allocation of those posts are in the most rural disadvantaged areas. This works in some provinces and doesn't work in others. KZN is probably one of the better examples of commitment to ensuring that posts are in the rural areas. The question about why community speech and hearing is the lowest number, there has been a lot of discussion around this category of worker. It was introduced by a training institution as a level lower than a speech therapist and audiologist as a professional. And there were great concerns about which race group was being recruited and for what purpose. And it appeared as though the training institutions were committing to ensuring that professional groups as speech therapy and audiology had necessary capacity to enter communities. And it wasn't seen as though one race group was being trained to enter that race group community. So it was about equity. And I stand to be corrected, but at the moment I don't believe they've been trained. Rather, the professional is being trained in terms of being able to have the similar competencies.
Thank you.
I think that's another opposite for you, it's like the chief. I'll just quickly touch on one or two things, because most of the questions have been attended to, barring equity targets. and I know.
Honorable Lamula, through
the chair. I know that we have
through the chair, please.
And I don't know. We've been trying to get the number, but we will get it. Training for prevention of disability. In our directorate, we have what we call medical genetics education program, and this is linked to the South African inherited diseases. I refer to the medical genetics education program, which is done in collaboration with the South African Institute Inherited Diseases Association, which is an NGO, but they encompass and accommodate quite a number of inherited diseases, which invariably will end up in some form of disability. And we have a program that deals with this. We are not training, and we're targeting nurses, because we know we can never get enough doctors. But the number of nurses that are being trained might not be enough, but we're trying to target all the provinces to at least have nurses being able to recognize inherited problems that might lead to disability. And Chair, I must thank the Parliamentary Monitoring Group and the committees for putting everything that happened here on the website. And I'm one of the people who visits it all the time, so everything that happens, we try and follow in the department based on what has taken place in Cape Town, even though we are in Pretoria. I know I referred to task shifting, we're moving things to where they can be addressed better, and the issue of community health workers has been dealt with. The opening of nursing schools, there's much that's been done to try and address that. But we are not doing it as opening nursing schools, but trying to train critical groups, midwives especially, who, if we have enough midwives, will abet some of these problems. Because before a child is born, you can even recognize this. And I think during the antenatal clinic visits, it's important that women should be made aware of possibilities of inherited diseases, even though in a way that it shouldn't be scaring the women to come to the clinics. So it's always a balance. And Dr. Pillay referred to the issue of health workers for change, which is a process that we are dealing with and hoping to ignite change by following that process. Sign language training, again, we don't have sign language training. I know in my directorate there's a lady who has taught all of us how to deal with people who are deaf, and some of them can lip read. I mean, I go and visit Hetty and I sit and look her into the eye and I talk to her and we communicate, and the whole directorate has come. And we have a very close link with SASLink. I think it's South African Sign Language, I don't know, the IMC. And we use them quite frequently to try and help us to deal with some of those issues. Thank you.
So last point, to answer your question about the status in the department, against the 2% target, it's 1.4%. So it's not anywhere close to 2%, but it's improving. You know, one of the challenges is to actually get, and I think it was raised by the DG as well, is to get people with persons with disabilities to apply. So
yeah.
Ralph Freeman was telling me that we've been encouraging the civil society organizations we're working with to send us names of people, you know, so that we can consider them. I'm not sure how else we do it, though, but I can tell you, I sit on any number of panels interviewing people and shortlisting. The number of applicants we get is unless you apply, you know, you don't even get considered, that's the thing. So unless we headhunt, you know, or we do what we're trying to do with civil society organizations, I'm not sure how else we do it. It's a challenge, and I'm sure people also don't come forward because they feel that maybe there are barriers or people won't take them seriously. You know, I'm sure there's that too. So I think we need to do more about the awareness thing that I think
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Dr. Kelly, I think awareness, an awareness field, even on community radio stations, Oh, soon as she's helped, we don't want to finish.
One last point. I think it's very critical in terms of prevention, and that's the impact of alcohol and substances on our babies. And it's something that is totally preventable. Fetal alcohol syndrome is actually a criminal act, and so is sick. And I believe now in the Western Cape there are more sick babies than fetal alcohol diabetics. So we really need to look at the preventive strategy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, member. I don't know. We are finished. Danny, can I say, honourable member, we said we are running out of time, so I know it is very it's very exciting, it's very interesting, but you know we have very strict constraints as far as time is concerned. But in the nutshell, honourable members, you can see we can see the way where health is going. And you know, as I'm listening, it reminds me of the olden days. We are going back to the olden days, whereby we'll see a nurse with a suitcase, and then after that, in that house, we'll see nappies, and the children would know that nurse was not a thing. Nurse was here with a suitcase. That's why she brought us the baby. So I think we are going back to the basics, and I think this is it's very exciting, and I can see that. We are now actually going to be. We are going to emphasize on preventive approach, and as we normally said, prevention is better than care. And if we can emphasize this preventive approach, we are going to have less patients in the hospitals. We are going to have, you know. Because the more you prevent, the better, and won't get to the curative stage. But what I want to say to the Department of Health, as we pointed out, I think you have to do a lot of awareness. There are good things that you are doing, but out there we don't hear them. You know, I'm so excited now to hear that the school health. You know, there's such a sexual abuse at schools. There's such. I was reading in Soweto today. Where a boy of 9 years was sexually molested by another colleague of 14 years. Now, for the fact that we are going to have this school health services, we are going to have the inherited. I think you must talk about these things on AMA. We want to hear you. We don't want to hear you in the boardrooms. You are doing a great job. But out there, we don't hear you. So there are community stations, there are abolition stations. Buy slots, man. I think you can have money to buy slots there. Just go on. I normally hear Dr. Mutwale on the radio. So please, man, do a program that will teach the community of the things you are doing and how good they are. I think we are getting somewhere as far as next. Story. No, Dr. Pierre, don't look at me. I won't give you a chance. I know you are very, very passionate about this.
I just
okay.
Want to say thank you for the opportunity and thank all of my members too.
Okay, Chair. Chair, I think we've come to the end. I don't know if you want to say anything. Oh, thank you. Okay. I think one should actually invite you to go down to our provinces, to the community, and tell them these good things that you are doing. Ne? Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Let me do this again.
I don't know. Could I ask you